You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So, firstly, there are a lot of candidates running to be Mayor of Auckland. Why should people be voting for you?
I guess because I was asked to run for mayor. I didn't actually stick my hand up and wave the flag because I was helping somebody else. They seemed to be failing, so I took it over. And from there on, I then thought, right, what do I have to do? I thought I'd go and check out what's wrong with Auckland. Did that, found solutions, and thought, act on them. So I'm already acting on them.
Oh, that's fascinating. So what do you think, what are these things that you think are wrong with Auckland?
Oh, everybody says traffic, and sure enough, that's for real. I know why they're doing it. They're actually under instruction to do it, which is a bit sad. But the other thing is, of course, infrastructure's been put in after building another, the immigration, the mass of people coming to Auckland, that's caused us to have traffic jams. Roads aren't ready for us.
So is public transport the solution, or is it more roads? I mean, there's lots of different people talking about lots of different things. What would you do to resolve that?
It's got to be public transport next. Absolutely a must. But the way we've got it now, we have the wrong kind of transport here at the moment. Too many private industries should be going back under the local body rule. And the ways that I believe would be fixing Auckland would be not with heavy rail, but with trackless trains. And if you've ever heard of those before?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're about one-fifth the cost. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge saving. And they're available now.
So they wouldn't still be stuck in traffic, or, you know, would they be separated from the road like the light rail is proposed to be?
Got to make it attractive. Got to make them free.
Yeah.
So people start to use free transport that comes right into the city and in the local suburb areas, you're going to get people taking it.
Mm-hmm.
You can still drive your car, but the roads will be thinner.
Right. So the light rail proposal that's currently being looked at, that's something that you wouldn't back?
No. In fact, I think they've put it off already. Mm-hmm. They've taken it off the agenda, and the money's been redirected elsewhere.
Mm, right. And that's something, when I spoke to Phil Goff, he said that he wants it sooner, and he's not happy that it's being pushed back. So,
yeah.
I mean, you don't buy into the fact that it's actually gonna happen.
No, it's actually far too costly. It's inconvenient for standard traffic, and look what's happened to Albert Street and the commerce there.
Mm.
It's absolutely ruining the city's, you know, the businesses there, the people who actually work for a living in town.
But that's the underground.
Yes, it is, but it's also above ground at the present stage. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at the interference, and now up in K Road.
So you think that the Dominion Road light rail wouldn't be any different? That would cause the same sort of disruption?
Absolutely. You've got overhead line to put in. And even on the electric side, they've got the drawings I show don't show everything. It is quick and easy to put these other vehicles in right now. They're available. And why are they not looking at them when they look more as modern as everything else?
What distinguishes them from a bus?
They're longer. They take more, of course, in that respect, and they can do what other vehicles can do on the road. Mm-hmm. If there's so many models of them out there, it's technology that's now available overseas. Why are we going backwards?
In this race to be mayor, we've got a couple of big names. Obviously, there's the incumbent, Phil Goff, everyone sort of knows him before he became mayor. John Tamaheti as well, drawing up a lot of media attention. What distinguishes you from these big names that people might just vote for if they don't even, you know, if they don't really think about policy, they're just going to tick a box because it's a name they know?
Yeah. I come from an engineering or technical background. I built most of Auckland. I built a lot of the university itself, the airport, and other things as an electrician. Been in the military, so I have discipline and understanding of structure and people getting on together. Studied psychology as a hobby for 40 years, so now I'm pretty up to play with how people think and tick. So in every respect, I'm not political, therefore I'm not constrained by their way of thinking, and I understand infrastructure has not been put in the right way around, and you must work with every form of industry, and people are an industry because they make Auckland tick.
So that change the way that you worked with central government, if you're considering you don't consider yourself necessarily a political person?
I think, as a lot of people will do, look at central government, even local government, and say, why are they doing what they're doing? Because they're not living like all the other people are. It doesn't make them right or wrong. What it does do, it says that they have a different perspective on what is important for the people. And if you look after the people, it's strange. The people will actually look after you. It works in reverse to what they're thinking, so it doesn't go that way. But it's not just transport that's a problem. They're looking, as they've now called it, a climate crisis, for example. The answers are staring us in the face, but they're not acting on them. And that's where I've become very keen on pushing that one through.
Yeah, and that was actually the next thing I wanted to talk about was climate change or the environment. It's obviously a lot bigger than just Auckland, but we are the biggest city. What would you do to try and combat climate change or improve New Zealand's green image?
It wouldn't be a try. I'm actually doing it. I'm working with bodies now and international corps. And bringing in particular plants, pyrolysis plants, which don't use flame. So there's different ways of handling rubbish and waste in Auckland and creating product electricity and other products like green diesel out of them, for example, which means we're converting in a circular economy. All our waste goes into what it should do and be regenerated into something productive that we can use. It's the instant answer to it. There are very complex modes and there are some simpler ones, and they can be basically managed and handled to do the jobs in the right places. Even the ocean is something that I'm tackling. So whether I make mayor or not, this is still going ahead as a policy of mine, even as non-mayor.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you sort of, doesn't really matter if you get the job, you're still going to be doing these things, which is good to see. Looking through your policy list online, something that stuck out to me is that you're opposed to 5G. I wanted to know, why is that?
When anybody pushes something under your nose or right in front of your face without telling you first it's coming, then you start to look at it. Now, I am an investigator. I'm actually a profiler, and I do work inside some pretty big areas. I understand what 5G is more than most people because I've looked at it. If you ask anybody else what's 5G, they just think it's another addition to standard, the 4Gs, etc. It's not. It's a military-grade type product which has a frequency range which is extremely high and extremely low. Low frequencies can give you irritable bowel syndrome, for example, and this is what was found in Christchurch after the earthquakes. So there's a lot about it, and also the way it's directed. It is not a bandwidth such that is wide, it's very narrow, therefore it's targetable. And I've even got lasers at home that I use for other work. If you put your fingers in front of the laser, you burn. So this stuff is dangerous to the surface of the skin, and they have been used as crowd control.
So it is significantly different to 4G or 3G that we've had in the past.
Oh, big time. Massive. In fact, I've been working with an engineer. We've done a film, and I'm doing some work up in Wellsford, actually on a display of this kind of material on Saturday, to show people what the dangers are.
That's interesting. So are you at all open if more information's revealed, or are you sort of blanket? I would love
to see more information. At least prove it's safe. It's not been proven safe. It's been proven that it works, yes. Is it safe? Not been proven. And that's, if you just look around, you'll see that's the case. Fibre is the fastest there is. Impossible to beat fibre. It's light speed.
And when you talk about something being proven safe, I see from another interview you did that you're opposed to vaccinations, largely at least. I think that's your position.
I didn't push that really that hard. I do know that when I was young, if anyone got the measles, all the mums pushed the kids to go and get the measles off the kiddie down the road or whatever who had them.
Wasn't that chicken pox?
All sorts, measles as well.
Right.
Yeah. And from that, I learned also that people who are born after 1950s or pre-1957, which includes me by 2 years, we don't get chicken pox. Mm. Oh, sorry, measles. We're almost immune to it. Why is that?
But there are over 1,000 people now in New Zealand. We've got more in New Zealand than the entire United States cases of measles this year.
I don't know why that is.
That's pretty severe.
Now, if I was to answer that, I'd be pulling rabbits out of a hat. I can't do that. But what I can say is that I do know that people who are super healthy often don't allow their immune system to get a bit bashed around, staying up a bit later, having a drink too much, eating a bit of fatty food or whatever. Because if you don't build up your immune system, it's like going to a gymnasium where you build your muscles up. You go there to build it. If you don't make it strong, it cannot protect you.
So you still respect people who choose to get vaccinated? You're not actually opposed to, it's just your own personal belief about your own body.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, when people bring it up and people are getting sick, and it can kill you. So by all means, everybody to their own. I'm not here to dictate ever.
Right. No, interesting.
Well, you got measles.
Yeah, we're stuck in a tiny little room now, so. Now, looking at the rest of your policy list, so we've talked about transport, talked about the environment. What are some of the other issues you think that are facing the city?
We have too many people in here. Now, I don't know why it wasn't looked at ahead of time. If you load a city up with houses or buildings, you're going to increase people, you're going to increase traffic, you're going to increase problems. Everything affects something else. And so therefore, when I looked at that, especially where I'm living near Hobsonville Point, the massive housing that went down there turned quiet roads into rampaging highways. Now, that's now feeding into the city. And of course, now we've got city with Ludo Campbell-Reed has been instructed and protected by the mayor to block the roads, to make it harder for people, to short phase lights, to make it easier for pedestrians. This is public. He's actually said this on air and it's recorded. So when you look at that, you're thinking, why are they doing this? It's to force people into public transport. Well, make public transport really easy right up front. It's costs. The billions of dollars to put in that one single railway line out to the airport, just as an example, cannot be shifted around to go anywhere else. So it's a lot of money going to a project or projects at the cost of other areas that do need financial assistance. And I've even been as far as Wellsford up north, where they are saying up there, their money that they're putting in, I think they're meant to be getting about 50 or 60 million back for their area. They've got 5.5 million back for their assistance. Ambulances are getting flat tires on the roads. Police cars following them up are getting flat tires on the roads. I've been up there and talked to them. They're furious. So looking after the people all over, not just one or two big projects. I find that wrong.
So you kind of touched on a couple of things, I feel like, in that. So housing, is that something? I mean, it's obviously a central government issue, probably more than a local government issue, but is there something that you would do to try and get more people off the streets into housing?
Absolutely. In fact, talking about bringing in these pollution devices or ways to overcome that, I'm talking to similar banks of people who have got a brand new building product systems that can make housing very, very much affordable and extremely attractive with totally different material, including a health and safety side, superior to anything that's out there. There could be a few limitations because some people won't want this material to come in because it will upset other companies, corporations that rely on their business to maintain from the status quo. So yes, people have a need to get them off the street, but why are they on there in the first place? It's managing people the right way around. No freebies. You've got to help people. Don't just hurdle them or herd them into an area or something. Give them the support that they need. And that's where I like the psychology side I have. It's actually knowing how to help people.
And something else that's on your policy list, you think the current education system is failing.
Yeah.
Is that something that you can actually tackle as mayor as opposed to being in government?
Well, I think the mayor has a voice. He's meant to be the people's champion. So when he gets out there, for example, and says, look, I want to talk to people about this, would you like to listen? And then show them what we have discovered, which is not being implemented in the schooling system. Not everybody is designed for school, and other people in certain aspects are hands-on. Well, you know the kinesthetic visuals and auditories. Now, all of this stuff is normal.
Yeah.
But I'm now talking about a totally new system of unraveling a person's personality type prior to them entering school. This means you can guide people and help them out superiorly.
I'm just trying to think. We're sort of jumping all over the place, but that's just because I'm like looking at a list of policies and going, what bits haven't I addressed? So I suppose another thing that I meant to actually bring up earlier when we were talking about the climate is one thing that's being talked about at the moment is a climate crisis. Would you officially declare one, or is that just sort of virtue signaling?
No, I wouldn't call it a crisis because you can't just pull it up and say, bang, crisis time. You know, the water's now up around the tops of the skyscrapers. No, we have a mismanaged climate. I know why it's caused or where it's coming from, and it doesn't just come from what we are looking at. It's not just solar either. You're looking at the oceans becoming more acidified at the moment. There's only ways of tackling that are to do with sea plants. Sea plants can assist, but also taking the carbon dioxide out of the water, that can be done as well. It's technology, and because it's my background, I have a strong interest in researching it. So the oceans can be reversed. Pulling the plastic out of the oceans is able to be done now, which is amazing. And just basically stopping landfills. Landfills produce more CO2, which rolls down low on the ground and out into the water, which creates the acidification. It causes plant life to grow. Real fast. Exponentially, that's the word. The knowledge of how, well, on the soil side, that's something that I've actually took up as a hobby some years ago and then became a bit of an expert in it. Was taken to India and I had to see the horticulture, the Minister for Horticulture in Northern Territories, and I spoke at the University of Hisar on showing them how to improve their cropping And they wanted me to stay there, but I wasn't keen to stay in India at that stage. It's a different country, and I wasn't used to that.
Yeah.
So having a knowledge of soils, of plant life, of general health, it made me think, why am I learning all of this stuff? And all of a sudden, someone says, why aren't you running for mayor? And then that's when it all came together. And I thought, everything I've done now could be purposeful, and I could bring something about to make it happen, make a change. It's the same as a large construction site. Everybody's got to get on. Otherwise, it won't happen, and costs escalate.
Yeah, I like this different way of thinking about it, because a lot of people do talk about how politicians just talk and talk and talk and don't really talk about actually doing things.
Yeah.
Would you consider standing for central government as well, or are you very much Auckland focused?
I have to tell you, I've been asked by three parties, not the standing ones, three parties to actually step in and do something big.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, whoa, this is getting big. It wasn't quite what I was thinking. But it's because of the way that when they meet me and they hear me talking, and then afterwards, here we are, having discussions about it. So three parties.
Oh, interesting. Well, like I said, I've been jumping all over the place. Is there anything else you reckon I have missed or you would like to add before we finish up?
I think if anybody wanted to know anything, as I get questions, I do answer them on my Facebook. The idea being that there is problems, therefore there are solutions.
Mm-hmm.
A solutionist finds out what to do about it and get on with it. I was very proud to say that in 2009 at the Entrepreneurs Summit, out of 470 people, they wanted the top 12, and I got in. And that was amazing to find out that the way that you think under pressure can resolve problems. And it's just certain people can do that, and I enjoy doing it.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.